Welcome to another episode of the Mind Hack Books podcast. On this episode, you'll finally find out if I am a total dimwit. And joining me is Christina. How are you?
Hello. Hello, everyone. I'm fine. Thank you. How are you?
I'm very excited and very worried to talk about this book because I need many questions answered. I had a bad and great time reading it, and I'm not sure I understood it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm the one who recommended the book, so I should have the answers. Problem is, I read it a while ago, and I kind of had to, like, remind myself of the names of the characters and kind of, like, what it was actually about. But I think I remember most of it, so it will be a fun...
I remember all of it, but I don't know if it makes sense. I want to say, first of all, thanks for coming back. It's been 30 episodes since you first joined us for the Piranesi episode at 32.
Ah, yeah. Piranesi.
And I want to ask, do you regret your life choices that you're still with us on this podcast adventure?
I don't really get this. Like, I like this. I like talking about books. And
just making sure, because many people get burnt out reading, like Paul recently.
Ah, poor Paul. Yeah, I like to read, so far, not a problem.
So I was trying to think, because we have this theme going, like, I like aliens, and Paul likes men and all this, like, toughness. So I think I'm starting to see a pattern with you.
Yeah.
You definitely have a good eye for, it's like a checklist. Unreliable characters, unusual writing style with, like, not gimmick, but a different way to structure the book. Some kind of mystery, British writer, and... something that's based and grounded in reality?
Well, these are the books I've recommended for the podcast so far, because they were in some way unusual, or I thought this was something you could also, like, maybe enjoy, or it would be interesting to talk about. I read loads of stuff. I do tend not to read science fiction that much. Aliens... Mm-hmm. Not really my thing. Not all the time. But I can see why you might see that pattern, because we've had Piranesi, we've had the Twyford Code. I've also recommended Conspiracy of Truths to you, which also fits in with that unusual narrative style, unreliable narrator. I just think sometimes it's more fun when you. Have to, like, consider the narrative and be suspicious of what you're told. It can be kind of annoying at times, because
you just have to make sure it doesn't fly over your head and you're completely out of what's happening. Which definitely didn't happen to me this time. So I asked you once, if you were to choose any book that I would make Paul read and be the three of us to read.
Yeah.
Which would it be? And you said this one, The Twyford Code. And unfortunately, Paul bailed on us. I couldn't force him to read this.
He didn't like it at all.
He didn't even try it because he was very busy. Mm-hmm. He's got other problems to worry about. And I've already pushed him to read about 7 other books. So it was a bad timing. But I want to ask you, did you choose this for Paul as revenge for The King in Yellow?
No. To be honest, I don't know enough about Paul to choose the perfect revenge. Should I even want to do that?
Okay.
Yeah? You think he would really absolutely hate it?
I don't know if he would hate it, but because on episode 42, check that one out, we were very disgruntled about Paul's favorite book. The King in Yellow, especially Christina. And it was very mysterious and, like, kind of to this kind of mystical, almost like a horror.
Yeah.
But so this is also very mysterious, but in a completely different way.
I felt that the promise under which I was reading the book, that it would somehow, you know, fill me with existential horror, or you know, make me consider things deeply. I felt that book did not deliver on that. Instead, I was like, yep, you certainly tried, so good job, but...
So actually, yes, I think he would hate this. I think Paul would hate the Twyford Code wholeheartedly. He wouldn't be able to get through it, I think. He just like, get to the point, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, but that's the thing. So how much are we actually like spoiling about the book?
So as usual, let's talk about it in general, okay. And then let's spoil it completely and hopefully explain it, which I need at least some parts. And I think this is why people listen to us. Like, do you want to read this? Is the first part, and then if you've read it, are there things you want to think about more in detail, or are there stuff? Is there stuff you missed? So hopefully, we'll find those things. I'll do my best.
So do you agree with me? Because like when we talked about you reading it, I said that I don't think this can be done as an audiobook properly. Like, I don't think you can do that. Yeah, do you agree?
So specifically, I only read it. I didn't listen to it at all. But I read the review that somebody really liked the audio recordings. Which there is a specific part of the story, which I will not say yet, that I'm very curious how they did it in the audiobook, because it gives stuff away. So I don't think it's a good idea to listen to this as an audiobook. And I did like it. I felt like it's, like I said, going over my head at parts. I was like, who's where? What? Which? It's like a plot twist, the book. Like so many levels of...
Intrigue,
yes. So obviously you recommend this. So why do you like it? Is this the main appeal, that there are so many unexpected turns and so many levels to the intrigue?
Yeah, I think so. When I began to read it, I was just very quickly captured by, well, the strange spelling of certain words. That was interesting to me. I found it a bit funny, and just the, you know, the premise behind the whole book, that this is like older man who is trying to connect to the son that he never really got to know at all, and he's had to reevaluate his life and try to find some way, I guess, be a father or explain himself, kind of apologize to his son for why he was absent from his life. And
there are many angles on this, not only the mystery. Yeah, so when you read a detective story, do you guess a lot? Do you try to figure it out yourself, or do you just go along with it and then
at the end? It depends. Sometimes I can kind of tell, but usually that's when the story is not that good. But I can tell, like, yeah, he's totally the bad guy, absolutely. But I like my friend Sophie. She is amazing at that. Like, I call her like Detective Sophie, because she just, you know, we are reading something and I'm like, I think like it's that guy. So I'm like, no, it's totally not. It's completely different. And she'll actually like solve the mystery when I had no idea what was happening.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So for those people, this book has to be amazing, I think. Like we always say, who would we recommend this to people who read a lot of detective stories, mystery stories? Super recommendation. This is a very original, multi-level mystery.
Mindfuck.
You could have a lot of, yes, very much a mind duck. I can see somebody having an amazing time with this. I don't read that kind of story that much, so I was kind of like hoping that I will get it. That was my feeling, that I would not lose track of what's happening.
Yeah, it's like if you read, like Philip said, if you read a lot of detective stories and you enjoy mysteries, then I think you'll enjoy this, because this is something different. It's not your typical whodunit.
I was very primed for trying to decode and find something for myself while I was reading it. I couldn't find nothing. So the book starts and there's this professor and he gets a lot of audio recordings. And then most of the book is audio recordings. And before the audio recordings, there's a preface that says, the audio recordings are a little bit scrambled up. And here are some notes that you will see. And there's like a page and a list of stuff you will see. And I was like, oh boy. Code already. So like you said, there are some words misspelled. So those stood out. So I was trying to find something between those misspellings. Couldn't find nothing. Of course, at the end, they tell you what you're supposed to find. And then you can't see it. So that's nice.
I am completely rubbish at any kinds of code, decoding stuff. So what I've learned is just like, oh yeah, you want me to solve a code? I'm going to wait for you to solve it
okay,
for
that's
me.
Okay, that's my question.
Like, that's what, I am not a decoder.
So you can enjoy it even without trying to decode anything.
Oh, absolutely. I think actually you'll enjoy it more because okay. I think you end up... Because like if you expect that like you're not going to solve it, then you don't feel as much of an idiot when you don't like solve it at the end.
Because yeah, that's true. But my other question was: do you think it is worth rereading? Because you might see things you missed.
I think so.
And I did.
I think
bit,
so. Yeah. I think definitely this is a book that you can read it. At least twice. Like, if you read it the first time, you're kind of swept along on this journey and you're going along with everything that's happening, getting your mind blown every other page by all the turn of events. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, you're like, oh, right. So yeah. That's why it was so weird in so many places.
Yes.
And so afterwards, I think the reread would be good.
So I think that might be an interesting second perspective, and I did open it from the beginning again, and I noticed immediately that the dedication for the book is in the code.
Oh,
that it's described.
Is it? Okay.
Because there is a preface like before the beginning, and it's some nonsense. And I was like, then I opened it again because I went to check something. I was like, oh, for my brother Brian. And I can see it immediately. I was like, oh, okay, so that's nice. So some of the code stuff you can quickly spot. If you've read the book and you come back to some parts of the book.
And if you remember what the code was, which I don't.
I don't think this is a spoiler. So part of it is something called acrostics, which is hiding information in sentences and texts. And the most basic one is take the first letter of each word. So at the beginning, there is like a poem or some kind of sentence.
Oh, and, yeah,
and
I see.
And if you take the
I
first
see.
Letters, it mm-hmm. says for my brother Brian.
Yeah.
Which is the same with the very ending of the book,
oh.
which I want to talk about later. So, yeah, it's very interesting. I have to say the first half was kind of slow. I couldn't get into it. Second half, I was very much into it. Did you feel like it was slow?
Maybe at first. It's because in the first half, he's reminiscing very often. I think the father, Stephen Smith, is reminiscing very often on his childhood, what happened to him and Miss Isles, and mm-hmm. how he got into this gang of criminals and how he ended up in prison. And yeah, so it takes like a long time to give you a lot of the information that you need to know before jumping into the second half, where things kind of snowball and are very happening very quickly, mm-hmm. and they're running and they're trying to find out. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, so very quickly, something I found about the writer and the book came out last year, 2022, very recently. It's only 300 pages long, or 380 pages, almost 400 mm. pages. Didn't feel so long, but felt slow in parts. And Janice Hallett. Born in 1969, screenwriter and UK journalist. She won an award for a book she wrote before this one called The Appeal. Have you read that one?
I have not. Yeah, but I hear it's
very highly
like,
praised
yeah.
as well. Yeah. So for that book, she won the award for like fiction in crime, and the award is called Crime Writers Association New Blood Dagger Award in 2022. So I thought it was funny. She was also nominated a few times for the Best Mystery Fiction in Translation in Japan. Which, by the way, Japanese people love mystery books. They only read mystery books. They read nothing else but mystery books. I don't know why. So I guess she might be popular in Japan.
Well, then she should be popular in Japan, yeah.
And the book itself has got like few reviews online. It's not so popular. But many people have very high praise, and everybody keeps saying that in the future this will be the new queen of crime fiction, and it's like the new amazing, this like gem. Do you think that's true?
I don't really like when people go, the new queen, the new king of this genre, because like very often the people who are called this, like, the queen, Colleen Hoover, how amazing is she? And it's like, yeah, just because it's popular doesn't mean it's good.
Okay. But it is different, it is original, it is a fresh take on a crime story. The tagline on the book says, the murder of the century or something like that. Like, let's solve the murder of the century. I don't think that's a good tagline. Which murder? There is none. Okay, there are murders, of course, but I mean, I don't get it. Did you get that? Like, what? Which murder is supposed to be the...
Well, missiles?
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I guess there's, like, there's missiles that you have to solve it. But no, it's not the best tagline. I actually managed to find some reviews on the Twyford Code, like, you know, regular readers' reviews. And I think what I'm seeing a pattern. The people who really loved the appeal don't like the Twyford Code.
Oh, okay.
That they're, like, they're disappointed, they're let down. And I think I tried to read a couple of, or no, I read the summary of the appeal and I went like, it's not for me. I don't think I want to do this. So there might be like that it appeals to different audiences, like quite different, these two books.
So before we get into like the actual plot, one last thing I want to quickly mention is the connection to real life or history that actually happened. Do you know about Enid Blyton?
I do. I recognized the connection before I got to that that part of the book, because I loved Enid Blyton as a child. Like, those children's books, they are... I read the Czech translations, and like, looking back on it, there are parts of the books that are certainly problematic, but it's like... They were mystery stories of five children and a dog solving cases in this British town. And, like, all the children are quite posh and they're little assholes to the local policeman whose name is Goon. Yeah, his name is Goon. That's his name. And he always like, you damn kids, and get out of here. And he's quite stupid. And I can see how that might be these posh little twats being assholes to to working class people, because that's what they like. They're all boarding schools and yeah.
So the fictional writer of the Twyford Code in the Twyford Code book is called Edith Twyford, and the real lady who that is based on is the Enid...
Blyton, yeah. Enid Blyton.
That we just talked about, yeah. Did you see her fan page? EdithBlytonSociety.co.uk? It's like an amazing page.
I did not. I
was suspicious that you would know this, and I thought that if you knew this, then... I was sure you would like this website. I just sent you a link on WhatsApp.
EnidBlytonSociety.co.uk? Okay. Oh, how colorful. Wow. Yeah, this is like an old school website fan page.
I think it's specifically to like tag on your nostalgia.
I think yeah, the books that I loved as a child, it's the Five Fine Doubters. I haven't read any others. Yeah, I learned from those books how to possibly get out of a locked room if I ever was in one. So, two things: you need the key to be on the other side of the lock. You need the key to be in the lock, and you also need a gap between the bottom of the door and the floor. Like that, there can't be a threshold. Yeah. Otherwise, you're fucked.
I know that trick too.
So you need newspapers and like something to turn the key, and then you. So I learned that as a child, which it felt like important information to have. That I have retained it.
if the person leaves the key and if there is enough space under the door and if you have a paper and if you have a stick to push the key out.
But it felt like one of those mind-blowing things like, oh, now I have knowledge and I am powerful.
Yes, very much.
Yeah.
So another real historical event that I had no idea happened called Operation Fish, which was transporting the Commonwealth's gold, like Britain's gold, to Canada, which was the biggest operation in history as far as transporting any kind of wealth was considered. I have never heard of this.
No, I have not, but I assume it like could have happened. Lots of crazy things were happening during the war with people, with governments trying to protect the wealth, both cultural and actual physical gold reserves.
I looked at some photos, so if somebody faked this, I completely believed it was true. Like nowadays, you can't be sure anything online is true, but it seems like it's true.
No, I believe it's true. I believe it really happened that they would want to move the gold reserves to.
So that's something that's a plot point in this book I never heard of actually happened. So I was kind of absolutely not knowledgeable enough to tell which parts are actually something that actually happened, something that's made up, and then unreliable narrator and stuff is not true and it's true. So it was a difficult part of this reading experience. I was just like constantly questioning everything that has been said and spending more time thinking about what actually happened than actually trying to think about what's like the story. I don't know. It just kind of had a hard time at points with it.
Okay, fair enough.
Right, so I guess you definitely recommend it. Anything else you'd like to say before we get into the plot?
Yeah, I think like before we get to the plot, before we start spoiling stuff and you like have to make a decision, do I read it for myself? Do I discover the wonder of, what's her name? What's her face? Edith Twyford on my own?
Yes.
Or do I just listen to this wild ride that that they're going to take me on? What was I going to say? No, okay, I remember. You kind of, like the fish on the cover, you need to go with the flow. Just like, if you decide to read it,
okay,
just go with the flow of the book, let it carry you. Try to think about it, of course, like, that's what it's for. Try to figure out what's happening, what is the code, why is the code. But don't get too hung up on it. Just enjoy the mystery, because you will get the answers in the end.
I definitely got very hung up on many things. Like at certain points, they especially mention some kind of things. Like at one point, for example, there is like an old car in a garage. And they're like, this guy has an old car and he also has a new car. And the old car is very strange and it's been there long. It's the old car and the old car.
But that's at the end. That's where you're getting the answers.
Yeah. I mean, just like an example. just like, even before they explained what that was about, they were just saying, oh, he visited him and there was this car. And I was like, I should probably know what that's about now, because it's almost at the end. And I was like, damn it. So I was like trying to remember, looking at where they talked about his car. So don't do that.
Yeah. Like maybe after you find out what happened, you can go back and like reread parts. And so maybe make notes about puzzling things and then you'll say
that could be actually fun if you wrote down stuff that you found were weird and then you find out later. Like, don't try to figure it out yourself, but it will tell you at the end. I would say 80% is answered of all the mysteries. 90% maybe.
I will accept that. I will believe you as that's that is what happened. But I thought everything was answered. But maybe I just, because like sometimes I do that, I'll say, okay, it's meant to be a mystery, and then I leave it.
Okay. To listeners of our podcast, I would not recommend it very much, unfortunately, because people listen to this mostly for sci-fi, and this is not that at all. And so amazing fight scenes, action, and in like philosophical pondering about existence, none of that is here. Don't expect the usual book that we usually read on this podcast.
Despite all the spies, despite all the spying and code, it's quite human and down to earth. I'd say.
Mm-hmm. So try it, please, for something fresh and new, and don't expect anything that you usually get on this podcast. So in that case, I recommend. If you want the usual sci-fi trash, don't read it. This is not sci-fi trash. Okay, so plot. Let's talk spoilers. So I'll try to sum it up very, very shortly, and then step by step, some details I need to like discuss.
Okay. I hope I remember enough. Shit.
It doesn't matter if you remember, I just mean more what you think. So like we said, there is a professor. His name is Mansfield?
Yeah, Professor Max Mansfield.
Max Mansfield. Mm-hmm. And he gets a message from Inspector Valiso.
It's a strange name. Sounds quite foreign, but, you know.
This part I picked up on. I was like, this is something weird in this inspector. And they gave him a bunch of audio recordings because they need his expertise, which the whole time in the beginning of the book I was like, what is his expertise? What is he a professor of?
I think I need to correct you that they didn't give him recordings, they gave him transcripts of recordings.
I was trying to say, like, you're supposed to know who this professor is, and the whole book I don't know what he teaches or what his deal is. Or
I see. I that was one of the things I like kind of waved away.
That's not important.
Is it like mathematics? Yeah.
Because my thinking at this point in the book was like, I have this code, I have all these clues for the code, the guy is the expert in this thing, so he should see this thing. So what kind of things should I be looking for? Probably something in his field of expertise. What is this?
So is he studying? You don't get to find out like what his field of expertise is. Just it's kind of hinted at. I assumed it was something to do with mathematics and mm-hmm. code breaking, but I don't think that's something you actually teach, so probably mathematics?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So he gets all these transcripts, and the transcripts are written by a software called Decipher It, Decipher IT in capital letters, which already, I'm sure it's fake.
I assume so.
Very suspicious, and the bullet points of the features of the software are written in like a fish almost, like a picture. So like there's lines of points like what this software can do.
Yeah.
And it can like decipher this and write that. And it was written like every, the next line was a little bit to the mm-hmm. right. Do you remember
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah.
So I kept staring at this when I started this book. I kept staring at this page of this text. And I was like, what is, there has to be something in this.
I see. See, that's one of the things that I did not pick up on, because usually I get like a version from the internet and the formatting is a bit weird at times. So mm-hmm. I didn't pick up on this as, oh, this could be strange. Is it a code? Was it a code? Did you find out?
Yeah, so I spent way too much time and I found nothing.
Yeah.
So never mind. So that was the thing.
Yeah. Be the fish. And go with the flow.
Okay, so already a mistake. Don't do this. So we get a bunch of notes about how the words are misspelled. The most prominent is mustard.
Yeah.
So if you see mustard in the text, it's must have. Mm-hmm. And the other words that stand out, like cause, so it's like KOS, like because, mm-hmm. and gonna is like gun,
mm-hmm.
and all kinds of strange words. So when you were reading this and you saw these, you never stopped and you didn't try to like find something in this?
No, I didn't. I took it as like, this is like, because this is what would happen. And this is what does happen when you like watch a YouTube video and you click on automatic subtitles and just, it's not an accent that Google is familiar with. It gives you like nonsense sentences and words spelled strangely. So I just accepted it as a like, yeah, that is a legit thing that would happen with this kind of.
Okay. So mistake number two, don't read it like me. Just keep reading. Don't try to find nothing. Definitely a mistake on my part.
But yeah. I think you can find the code in that if you kind of have the key to it by the end, then you go back.
Yeah, if you have the key, which I didn't. So yeah.
You need to wait until the end to.
So another thing is the swear words are censored, which it's fun to guess the swear words. And then there is different words are jumbled up, and I really liked how it's subtly told which the words were. Like you write something, it's kind of strange, and you remember something weird. And then a few chapters later or something, they say the words correctly, and you're like, oh, that's that. Yeah. So it kind of connects. So I like that. That's very clever. And the same happens with some audio recordings are like strangely cut off, or some text are missing, or something is strange, weird, different. And then later you kind of remember, oh, that's what it was. So that part is well put together. I like that it always is set up that it comes together. So that's a huge praise for this writer. It has to have been very difficult to make it so complicated and at the same time come together so easily, so you don't have to... I never had to go back and look for it. I always remembered it, what they meant.
Yeah.
So that's very, very well made, I have to say. So maybe, what do you think we should say happened next? I don't even know how much detail I should say.
I think we should introduce who the... So we said there's a character, there's this Inspector Waliso who sends the audio transcripts to Professor Max Mansfield because it's his expertise, but it's not only because of that, it's because the person whose audio recordings they are is actually Mansfield's biological father, Stephen Smith.
I forgot at which point they told him.
I think quite at the beginning, like you...
Okay.
That I assume that's what it was, that They're like, you have a connection to the... Or that is something that I figured out from the start, that the Professor Mansfield is the son of Stephen Smith.
I got it maybe like halfway through. I missed it, I guess.
Yeah.
I was like, who is this Stephen guy? Oh, it's his father. I was late on that, so I don't know. That's okay. It is from his father, the transcripts. So we start with Stephen talking about his school years. And he finds this book on a bus, the Twyford Code.
But it is a very mysterious moment.
There are lots of notes and papers.
Because it's a bus that is never in his neighborhood and suddenly it's standing there. And he gets on and he's the only one in the bus. And there is the book lying there and he picks it up. There's nobody around. And then he looks and he sees that no one seems to be driving the bus.
Mm-hmm.
And he takes the book.
This is the kind of detail I completely didn't understand at the end.
Yeah, because, like, do we spoil it now?
You can say anytime, but I don't know.
Because, like, that never anything. Happened.
Yeah. So that part I understood. Okay, but anything else is significant. I guess it's just to be mysterious, and that's it?
Yeah, I think it's there to kind of show you that Stephen Smith is not a reliable narrator, that you shouldn't take everything at face value, that there is something strange happening. Because there are parts of his story, as he tells it, that ring true, that are undoubtedly true.
This is exactly my problem, why I didn't enjoy this as much as I should have, because there are so many levels of this intrigue, like plot twist, that I was sure there is more than just it's not reliable either. I was sure there is something to this bus, and I was like, what is this bus? Why? Nothing, it's just
the bus is a signal that's something to kind of add to the atmosphere of mystery and to let you know that.
So mistake number three on my part, don't think about the bus. It's just
don't think about the bus.
So his teacher, Stephen's teacher, is called Mrs. Isles or Miss Isles.
Missiles, yeah.
And they constantly say missiles in the book instead of Miss Isles because it's transcribed wrong. So she gets the book from him because in the book is a note that says deliver it to her.
Yeah. But is there such a note? Because poor little Stephen Smith, he's dyslexic and he can't read properly. So he, you know, she tells him, yeah, look, there's this note that it says it's my book, you should give it to me. And he doesn't know if that's true because he found it on a bus and he can't exactly say, I know it's not your book, I found it on a bus. Why would it be there waiting for you?
Mm-hmm. So then strange things happen. We learn that the book is a children's book and there's this mysterious fictional writer, Edith Twyford, who we already talked about, and she hides code, like secret messages in the children's stories, and Missiles is somehow obsessed with this and wants to solve it. But also, she wants to read it to the children for some reason, even though the book is banned because it's not appropriate for children. Which I didn't understand this part very much, but okay.
That like, part was that kind of annoying jab at, oh, political correctness means we're banning books by classic authors, which, like, that is not happening at all.
Yes. So she's a huge fan, and the children become a huge fan of the book, and then she takes them on a trip to somewhere. I'm not really sure about this location. It's a place.
Somewhere
and
in
it's a
the
place
UK.
That's in the book,
I
think.
It's in the book, and it's a place that's connected to this Enid Twyford. It's in Britain. It's by the sea. There's cliffs there. Mm-hmm.
So it's just a place that they read about in the children's story. And Miss House disappears somehow, and we don't know what happened at this
point.
Yeah,
and like Stephen Smith, the adult, he decides that he is actually going to find out what happened to Miss Isles, because despite the shady shit she pulled on him with the book, he really loved her. She was a good teacher. He became excited about school, which was very important for him at that time, because his home life was not ideal by any stretch of the imagination. Basically, there was only his older brother at home, Colin. Their father walked away, never returned. Their mother as well, several years prior to that. So it's him and his older brother, and his life kind of sucks. But he's got school, which he's not very good at. But then there's Miss Isles, and then she goes missing. Mm-hmm. So Stephen Smith stops going to school and gets involved with this criminal gang. Is their name Harrison?
Yes, I think it's, but there are multiple gangs, or maybe not, I'm not sure.
It's one gang.
This was one of my questions.
It's one gang.
Is it the same gang all the whole time?
Yeah, it's one gang. But like, it changes leadership after the old dude dies.
Yes. One of the schoolmates also gets into the gang, and he kills somebody, right? I wasn't sure about this either.
I don't remember that, I'm sorry.
That's okay, not so important. But I wasn't sure if there are multiple gangs, so no, okay. So he's obsessed with finding missiles, what happened to her, and slowly he finds more and more information about the Twyford Code. This is after he got out of prison, where he was for 11 years for murder.
Yeah.
That we will find later what happened. But for now, he's just obsessed, and he's trying to find more and more information, going to places. Some of the classmates who went with him on this trip starts helping him. Tell me if I skipped something important, but they get to this tunnel where they get locked
in. Maybe what we need to say about the Twyford Code, or like, why would there be a code in children's books? Like, why would this Twyford woman be doing that? It's because it's assumed that she and her husband were spies during the Second World War. And there's a question, like, were they spies for the Allies? Or did they become spies for the Germans? And that is the connection, the code, and the Operation Fish that we told you about that was real. Twyford Code is not real. Operation Fish is real. That is important to stress. Like she was involved in feeding information to the Germans via these quite idiotic children's stories, because they are idiotic in the book. You see little quotes from the text, and it's the most sickening shit you've ever read. Like, oh, mommy,
Well,
it's the kind of, okay, maybe not sickening, maybe insipid is a better word for it. It's like, mommy, I have dirtied my dress. Oh no, Lucy, have you? Well, you must be a good girl and go and get cleaned up. That kind of sugary. Yeah.
That's true.
That was not like a direct quote. That's just the vibe you get when you read these little paragraphs.
Yes.
So this is all supposed to be a code for the Germans to tell them fake ? Informations about the Operation Fish, that is moving British gold reserves to Canada. Was it Canada?
Yes.
Okay, it was Canada.
So first we think it's supposed to tell you where the gold is. But then we find out it's supposed to mislead you at some points to find, to not find the gold, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Because at first they thought that they would find the treasure, and they will go on treasure hunt. But then they find this message in the book that they are able to decode, and the message says, you will never find it, give up. And that's like for the Germans or for the other side, that's supposed to mislead them. When they finally decipher it, they will not. So they go on this treasure hunt, and they find this tunnel in, I think it's like an RAF base.
Yeah, some kind of airfield base. Thing.
And it's near this other place where they went on the Tribbit missiles, I think, somehow. And they find a hatch, and they go inside, and they find a picture of a fish, and it's like painted over, and all mystery ensues, and they find a wallet from a German guy. Everything is
And the German guy, he was like high up in the Abwehr, possibly he died there in the tunnel, but missiles possibly also disappeared down that tunnel, many years after the war. And then when they are in this tunnel, they get shut in. Suddenly just the door closes and they're shut in. Who's they, by the way? We didn't mention Lucy. We forgot to mention Lucy.
Yeah, so there's Stephen, and I think at this point it's not Lucy yet.
It wasn't Lucy.
I think it's another. I think there's a bunch of schoolmates and they gradually lose interest. So there's schoolmate A and they go on treasure hunts, and then at some point they start to believe that Stephen is completely bonkers and they just let him. And then there's next person, the next person, next person. Lucy is the last one that he kind of uses to help him.
Yeah, and Lucy is not a schoolmate. She's
Donna or somebody, I forget. I don't know.
I think the one in the tunnel with him is the lesbian who's having trouble with her partner, wife. So she like joins up with him, tries to help him figure out what happened to missiles, and they get shut in the tunnel. Lucy comes in later. She's an assistant librarian who kind of takes pity on him, helps him figure out technical stuff.
So they get shut in, they can't go out, they keep screaming and beating the walls and the hedge. And then finally they are rescued by an old, like an elderly couple. I forgot their names.
I don't think their names are important.
And those two old people are looking for the golden rabbit. And they are also trying to decipher this code. And then they're never mentioned again. And that's not important at all. And I don't know if this even happened.
Well, it didn't happen.
So that's another thing. The part it didn't happen, I was kind of getting, but I was trying to find some significance to any of this, so not important, I guess. This is my problem with this, I guess. I always try to find some, like, why does this mean? Nothing. Okay. Is the answer. Let it go is the answer.
I think, like, if when you get to the end of the book and you are good at solving ciphers, you get kind of a key to going back and reading it and hopefully discovering what Stephen was actually trying to encode within the book. And at least that's what I assumed. That's why I didn't worry that so many of these passages and scenes that happen, then you later find out, oh yeah, that definitely did not actually happen. So why was it there? I assume it's because if you are good at decoding stuff and you have the key at the end, you can go back and solve the mystery that Professor Max Mansfield is supposed to solve.
Yes. So after this escapade, then we find more and more details about the books, and they find that the books' editions keep changing, and they keep changing the encoded messages, and they keep like sending messages. So they have an interview with the person who is the publisher of the books, but he has no idea, so they think there's like a middleman encoding, decoding the messages and all this. And then there is a flashback for the heist, maybe, or the gangs.
What actually happened?
So why is he in prison?
Why was he in prison? And like he did not actually kill the man that they sent him to prison for killing. It was a setup. The gang in which he grew up, who like the people who raised him, the couple, once they got like their own children. Because before they were taking in these street kids who maybe didn't have ideal situations at home, and they essentially acted as a family. And after they had their own children, these became more like, henchmen, essentially. And I assumed that when Stephen is talking about how he grew up, his childhood, and what happened with his family and with the gang, that is when he's being truthful. Those are
yeah, that's
real.
What I meant to mention, yes. So this is actually true. And he wanted to steal something, and then in the process found a load of gold, right? In this heist.
I think they wanted to steal the gold.
I remember something that they wanted, like, a box of some valuable jewels,
yeah,
or something.
Okay, I don't recall that. So I believe you. That then, is what happened, yeah.
And then they find the is it pronounced bullion, I think? Mm-hmm. Like the gold, yeah. Bullions. Like a bunch of gold. Which they didn't plan to steal, but they stole... Like, the bottom line is they stole so much more than they were planning to steal. Mm-hmm. They have this wealth treasure.
Well, did they steal it or did Stephen? Because what happened during the heist was that one of the gang was taken over by the sons of the original founding pair, and Stephen was at that point in time. Stephen was quite happy not actually doing crime because he found a steady partner, and they were quite happy together. But he felt very strong loyalty to this family. So when this new boss called him up and he said, "Hey, there is like one last thing we're going to pull off, and I need you to help me with my or taking care of my brother because he's like." Not very reliable, and like, you're somebody I can trust. You're going to go in there with my brother and you'll help us pull this off. Mm-hmm. Stephen feels like he doesn't want to refuse. He can't refuse. So he goes in, and it turns out that what the brothers had actually planned was for the brother to kill Stephen, but something happens. I think the brother actually, like, the brother he was meant to be watching flakes on them.
Yeah, he's very, very stressed out, and he freaks out.
So there's actually,
he can't move.
They somehow change the...
This part actually I liked a lot. So
yeah, okay,
this.
So please tell the story, because it's quite foggy. It's quite foggy to me. I'm not sure what happened exactly.
I like this part that, you know, I was sure this was actually truth. So I was paying attention. And the guy, so there are two people, and Steven's partner gets very, very anxious, and he doesn't want to even start the heist. And Steven pushes him into it, and he does a part of it, but then he gets completely stuck and he can't move. So Steven takes his role, and because they have baklavas, like masks on, they don't know who's who. So Steven starts to pretend that he's the other guy, who I don't remember the name of, you just said. Mm-hmm. And he finishes the heist, like, in his name, kind of. And during that part, while he's being framed and betrayed, they think it's the other person, and they kill Steve successfully as they planned, but they didn't know they switched places.
Yeah.
So that's why he doesn't get killed.
Yeah. So I think that the other brother's, the other guy's name is Johnny, I think. I think it was Johnny. And when I was reading it, I kind of assumed that he was so anxious and he lost his nerve, not because of the heist, but because he didn't want to kill Stephen. He didn't want Stephen to die. And that's what they were planning, the bosses. They were planning to kill Stephen, and he knew it. And yes. So I assumed he kind of let it happen like that.
It's possible. They don't say it explicitly, but also a part of it. Definitely why he was so stressed, because he knew.
Yeah, so they
he's gonna have
they to, like yeah. They shoot who they think is Stephen, and it's actually this Johnny, and then Stephen. So Stephen ends up with the whole loot, and he realizes he was betrayed by the gang, and then he disappears for a couple of days, and then he's in prison.
Mm-hmm. So basically, he was very lucky, and he got all the. We assume he got all the money and all the gold. Yeah, he won. In this, because the gang wanted to get him, and he's trying to now have not revenge, but you know, have his way. And so now, I guess, reveal what's actually happening. or not yet? I don't know.
I think so. Are you missing something? I think it's the right time, that because like that's the important part, like the all the code and running around and are they spies? Hmm. That's the cover story. The important story is Steve telling his son, Professor Mansfield, about his life how, why it turned out the way it had, kind of apologizing to him, explaining, mm-hmm. and also telling him where he can find the loot that Steven actually managed to hide from the gang. Like, that's one of the reasons why he didn't mind all that much being in prison, besides the fact that in prison he learned how to read and came up with this plan of sharing the loot, not only with the friends who helped him hide it way back when, but also with his family.
Yeah, from this point I was very much in. I loved, like, this part a lot. The part running around looking for the code, I wasn't very excited about, and also for the reason of suspecting it's not even real, and it wasn't even real, so it was kind of like, eh. If that part was shorter, I would have liked it better.
But, like, one thing from that part that I really enjoyed is when Steven goes in to, it's quite at the start, I think, he goes in to interview the Twyford scholar, that professor who's, like, specializes in Twyford, and he like, they have this really funny information where the conversation where the scholar is like, you know, talks in the way that essays are written about books, and you know, you've read all of her canon, like, oh, there's guns there in the books, are they? I didn't know it was, I thought it was for children, or that kind of,
yeah.
I thought it was quite fun.
It was very creatively written, that's true. So we skipped some parts, such as that the, there's like twists and turns, so we like said the ending, but that's what you learn at the very end. We skipped, for example, like a reveal that how Missiles actually got missing was that she got pushed or fell into this hole, into the hedge, I think, into the tunnel, because the children were told that she will stop teaching them, and they were freaking out because they're small children and they wanted to keep their teacher. And they just kept crying, and especially Steven was completely devastated and crying, and they accidentally pushed her down this hedge, I think, or something like that happened. But then we find out that's not true at all.
It's not. That's what Steven finds out in, like, quotation mark, finds out by the end of the book, that they, you know, killed Missiles. But then Professor Mansfield, after he finishes listening or reading all the transcripts, he goes to find out, okay, where is my father? I understand him so much better now. Where is he? I want to reconnect. And he's gone. So he goes to his friends and, like, yeah, his friends, they met him once since he left prison, which is strange because he's just read audio transcripts where they, like, are solving this mystery, this code, and so he googles, and there is no Twyford code, there's nothing on the internet about it at all, and so he goes on and on and on, and then he calls one of his father's friends, and he introduces himself as his father. And the friend is just while she was kind of standoffish in the transcripts, she's extremely friendly on the phone with Professor Mansfield, and she talks to him in a foreign language, and then she becomes uncertain, asks, okay, who is this actually? And when he introduces himself, she hangs up. Ooh,
yes.
Mystery. Her husband is a plastic surgeon, by the way.
Oh, okay. Is that anyway important in any way?
Because it's later implied that Steven looks completely different.
Oh, I've missed that. Okay. Okay. That makes sense.
And I think, now that I think about it, that beat up old car in the garage, that's gonna be that's gotta be the car that Steve drove away with the loot in, right?
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly the point, yes. So we get into the backstories of all the friends and how he paid them to keep quiet. And then there is a side quest, how he gets followed by men in black and he gets beaten up, taken into a van. That's not true. And it's revealed it's not true. And then there's Lucy, and super big reveal. She doesn't exist.
No, there is no Lucy.
And the best friend, who was the only friend who was very nice to him and always supported him, actually is just him talking to himself on the audio recordings, which conveniently we don't have the audio recordings, so we can't tell.
Yeah.
that it's him talking to himself, pretending he's a woman. So this part, I would be very curious how they did in the audiobook, if the guy reading the man was reading the man.
There are some really talented voice actors who could absolutely pull that off, I think.
There are too many levels of nonsense, because you would be thinking, is the actor doing a bad job impersonating a woman, or is he doing a good job because he's doing the same voice with the voice actor? Like, what?
It would be really difficult. I think it would be really difficult to do it as an audiobook, and also because all of that bullshit stuff that is supposed to be the call, then I guess you should be able to go back and solve, and like when you reread, which you can't solve an acrostic in an audiobook. I don't think you can. Or my brain definitely doesn't work that way, where I would be able to.
Yeah, of course. It would be a lot of mental processing, mental thinking to. Yes. So bottom line is that the father created the cipher code for the son, and he hid it. He hid parts of the loot, which is, by the way, the smallest. He left the smallest amount for his son, he mentions. All the other people get more. So he buries, I assume, gold or some other stuff in 8 graveyards that he finds with some coordinates and things like that. And then the book ends by him saying, okay, now you have all the clues, so now you go, my son, and solve it.
Yeah.
We didn't say the inspector with the strange name, that's the father to send him himself. Yeah.
I quite like that, like actually the inspector that Professor Mansfield is communicating with all the time, that's actually his father, and he,
that's the only part I could guess.
And like it's, I figured it was quite nice that the connection they had at the end when he says you might wonder where your old man is now, but it don't matter, don't look for him. You'd not know him now anyway, and the man he was is as good as dead. It's all about you. You're everything he's not. Mm. The picture of you on his phone, you look as happy as he should have been, as he could have been. Listen, Max, you're doing fine, but I need you to look even closer. There are clues here, clues that lead to the biggest haul of stolen gold and diamonds in British criminal history, something that's evaded not just the police, but also the thieves who took it. He wants to set you up for life, like he has those who stuck by him. You've read it all without realizing. Go back to the very start. And then he kind of suggests that, okay, maybe let it sit. Maybe solve it when you have your own children. You can make like a family game out of it. Because, you know, Professor Mansfield's got an okay job. Does he actually need all that extra money? He can. That's what I felt was kind of implied in that, in those messages at the end. Like why he didn't leave him the lot. It was because that's not what's important. Spending time with the people who are around you is. That's what I figured.
Yeah, that's very well said. I agree. The last line I want to say, the acrostic says, "Love is brighter than gold, but it is heavier."
That's nice.
Which is a nice ending. I don't know how to say it. I just kind of saw the code without trying very much. Like,
I did not see it at all. And now I'm looking at it. And okay, so your listeners can try if they could solve the acrostics via listening to the audiobook. Listen, objections vanish, exclusion is solved by raising inspiration. Graceful hearts teach effortless rapport. The here and now give our lives direction, because unless truth is told, it stays hidden. Emotions are vivid if echoes remain.
You would have to be super, super, super able to concentrate if you were able to decipher that from audio. But it's a nice ending. I think everything's tied up. There is no, the things that I couldn't understand were just signals that it's not true. So I'm just dumb, because I was trying to find something, because he said at the end, now you go and solve it. So I felt like there are so many tidbits and points and things that were not true, obviously, that are trying to say something, and I completely missed that. And now is my like task to go back and find it or something?
It's not your task. It's Professor Mansfield's task. So your task is to know there is a code hidden there for Max to find the gold. And if you're good at solving codes, then you can you can probably solve it.
The reason I thought that was that he already knows where the gold is, so there's something else, and now there's going to be like an ARG, what is it, augmented reality game, and you have to find the stuff in real life, and it's actually in the book, and the book will actually lead you to Edith, whatever her name is, you know who, and in her book there's gonna be something, and it's gonna be all like a mindfuck on a different level, so that's what I was afraid of,
yeah,
that this is gonna lead to, but hopefully not, hopefully that's where the code ends, and it's a satisfying ending, so that's where we should leave it.
I think you can kind of pick and choose what you kind of focus on when you read the mm-hmm. book. I enjoyed that personal story quite a lot of how he grew up, what were his roots, and then the afterword where Janice Hallett says that like 50% of UK prisoners struggle to read or are completely illiterate. Like that's a statistic, and you're like, wow.
I didn't know.
Yeah. That's
so he learned to read and write so hard that he made up a whole history of codes and made up a whole story about it.
Yeah, he does say that in one of those last messages to Max, where he's like, I never read as a child, so I wrote you a book or something.
Yeah, I remember that part. It was very, very nice. Very nicely said. Yeah. So I love the ending. I think it really, really... it's like a very satisfying ending, but I didn't like the execution like so much about the codes. There wasn't anything to get invested in. I wasn't really sure what anybody wants and why. And I wasn't really sure what I'm supposed to be getting out of this, other than the background of the characters, which don't even exist at some point. So I was like, why are we doing this? Just give me something to, you know, there's no hook kind of. Like the only thing that kind of keeps you interested is like, what is this about? But of course you want to know what it is about. So, but yeah, it's
I think we maybe didn't reveal all of what happens in the book, so even now, after you've listened to our kind of jumbled up explanations and retelling, you might still enjoy reading that and discovering the insanity for yourself, because it is quite crazy when you just get into the story and some things really don't make sense, because there might be a moment where you find out that this character, like something quite final happens to him, or quite dangerous happens to him, and the next moment, according to the transcript, he's completely fine, and the characters who witnessed this, you know, stressful situation, they act like it never happened. So you're like, okay, well, what the fuck is up with that? But then you discover that, yeah, like that, I think the way I understood it is that all of these inconsistencies and things that don't quite make sense, they are there to not make sense. That's what they're for. And possibly also because code... I don't know. I didn't go back and look for a code because I'm shit at that, but hopefully you should be able to do that.
But it's actually also very nice. I was kind of afraid that you would have to do it yourself, but at some point in the book, they give you parts of the book and they highlight what you should see in it. So you don't have to do it yourself. So that's also kind of nice that you can just relax and see what it was.
Yeah, at the end.
So you get the answer clearly at the end, which is very, very nice. I was sure that when I opened this book, that was my oh boy moment with all this list of the code, that there would be like pictures and maps and different kinds of media and photographs, and there would be different people talking about it. And I was sure there was a chapter like the guy gets the audio transcripts and then there is audio transcripts batch one. And I was sure after batch one, there would be a different person looking at it. And then it would be like a photograph or something. No, it's just audio batch 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7. And that's it.
Yeah. And
I don't know if I'm disappointed about it or if I'm happy about it, but I was surprised that it's just... and there isn't any other.
I think, like, very often books like this, they kind of work like magic tricks work, where if you go in to see a magic show, and the magician just pulls off something amazing, and you're happy that he fooled you. You're happy that, like, oh yeah, I did not notice anything at all. But if you go in wanting to work out how the trick happened, and then you're going to be really angry by the end because that fucker fooled you, and you don't know how he did it. Right?
Yes.
So that's the attitude you have to assume with this book. You're like,
I had definitely the wrong attitude, but I still wasn't angry. Still liked it. So that says something good about the book.
That's good. Yeah.
And I want to say thanks. I would have never read this otherwise, and it's definitely one of the most creative detective stories, and definitely belongs on this Mind Duck
podcast. Okay, good.
Definitely a multi-level Mind Duck. It was experienced on my part.
I'm glad. I hope Conspiracy of Truths also excites you in this way. that it is like this strange and wonderful and unusual.
Yeah, you definitely find stuff that's not the usual kind of book. And thanks again for recording. I am very glad to have read this. I didn't enjoy reading it as much as I hoped, but I enjoyed the ending a lot. And I like talking about it a lot. And the more we talk about it, the better it works together. Like we always say on this podcast, we always kind of find if the book's actually good, because if you talk about it for a while, you start finding all the problems, all the seams, or you can start to find that it's actually, you know, works well together, put together, thought out thoroughly. So this one, there is nothing wrong about it, and everything's clever and well thought out. I think it's a great book, just for a specific kind of reader, not for everybody.
Be a fish, go with the flow.
Okay.
Okay, thank you for having me again.
Thanks.